former Carolina head coach Dave Odom now joined us on the program. Of course, we know him from South Carolina, from Wake Forest, and love those many years in the coaching fraternity. And Bino and myself were talking during the break, and he's one of the great guys out there. In fact, Bino, we bumped into him down in Atlanta a couple years ago. He didn't even know who we were, you know, but he'll sit there and talk hoops with anybody.
Yeah, just really, really a pleasure to meet Coach Odom down there in Atlanta several years ago.
Yep.
And made an impression on me that day that hadn't left.
It's great, and I'm sure he'll be pleased to hear that. Let's bring Coach Dave Odom in with us now. Coach, how you doing?
Well, I am pleased to hear all of that, and I hope you guys have a great day up here in Rocky Top. You always say nice things about your guests before they come on.
Yeah, but then we rip you on the way out.
That's what I figured.
So, you know, I mean, at talk radio, you either get it on the front end or you get it on the back end. So I'm not going to lie to you, Coach. But
you know, you can have at it. That's all right with me right now. I'm not worried about it.
Hey, let's talk here. I know in your years and your travels, you've seen many a circumstance and many a situation, but we've never seen a coach suspended by his conference for part of a season. What kind of challenge do you think? And Bruce Pearl was talking yesterday about how he feels like at times, even though he's been back for two games now, he feels like at times, even though he's with his team during practice, he feels foreign over there on the sidelines. Is that easy or hard for you to relate to as a former coach, if somebody took you away from your team for eight games?
Well, guys, obviously I've never been in that situation, so until you've walked in somebody's shoes, you can't really say exactly how you feel about it or you would feel about it. But just looking at it and knowing Bruce Pearl like I do, having a certain amount of empathy for his situation, I can understand totally how he feels. In saying that, you know, he's still very much the head coach at Tennessee. You can see that his team responds to every beck and call that he makes. He's still very much the ringleader of the circus, if you will, up there. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I mean, he's the head guy is what I'm talking about. And but still, you know, there's a certain angle or certain sense of tenuousness that means, you know, I'm here today, I'm not sure I'll be here tomorrow. And, you know, that's got to be extremely, extremely difficult for him.
Coach, it seems like the coaching fraternity is just really, really tight, especially in college basketball. And yet Coach Pearl has always been one that seems to have been somewhat ostracized. From your position looking from South Carolina toward what was going on here, is that the feeling that you got about Bruce Pearl, or what was his standing within the coaching fraternity?
Well, first of all, Bruce Pearl is highly respected as a basketball technician, a basketball teacher, a basketball coach, highly respected by everyone. I don't know that I've ever spoken to anybody who says, well, he's this, that, and the other, but he can't coach. I mean, everybody knows he can coach, everybody. He makes good decisions on the sideline, and so from that standpoint, yes. If there's any kind of feeling around or amongst the coaching fraternity that he is in any way different, then I think it's simply because he and his program is very public relations conscious. That is, bigger is better. More is better. He's constantly in the news. Now, there are a lot of coaches who look at that, and I think the majority of the coaches look at it. They don't want to be in the headlines except at the end of the season when their team ends up in the NCAA tournament and they're playing for a national championship or trying to get to a national championship. The rest of the year, they would prefer to stay in the shadows and do their job without a lot of fanfare or media attention. Bruce, on the other hand, feels that, you know, in order to recruit, in order to get his program known, and I think going to Tennessee is that's a good example. Tennessee is a national university that has been best known for football and women's basketball through the years, although their men's basketball, going back to Stu Aberdeen and even before, they've got a great tradition, Ernie and Bernie and all of those kind of things. But I think Bruce felt like the best way to get his program known nationally was to be in the news 12 months of the year, if at all possible. So when you look at it, I don't think coaches ostracized him. They just looked at him as being different from that standpoint.
Yeah, and different isn't always better. I'll give you a quick anecdote. We, several years ago, I guess it was first or second year, took a bus trip down. In fact, we were with our friends here at Hardee's where we are right now. We took a bus trip down to see a game in Georgia. And he had told us beforehand, he said, well, we're going to come up and see your group, you know, really appreciate you guys coming on the road. You know, he's just trying to get traction for the program at that time on the heels of a morbid where the program had fallen into. And then during the game, people are looking at me like, I thought you said the coach was going to come up and say hi to us, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, that didn't happen. And then as soon as the game is over, he leads not only himself but the whole team up into the stands there at Georgia. And the truth is, you just don't do things like that. Now, I was glad he did it. I liked it. But among the coaching fraternity, I would imagine you guys look at that and go, geez, I mean, that's kind of unnecessary.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a good example. I mean, you know, he painted his chest. I mean, how many other coaches in the country would do that? That doesn't make it wrong either. It doesn't. It just makes it different. And then whenever it's normal for someone like you and others who cover the program on a day-to-day basis to look at it and say, well, nobody else does that, so they must not agree with it. Well, they probably don't agree with it, but it doesn't mean that they don't like Bruce. It just simply means that that's different, and he's done it his way, and the mainstream coaching fraternity has decided to be a bit more conservative. And again, it doesn't make it wrong. That's just the way it is. He has separated himself from the normal way of doing things by standing on chairs in the cafeteria and holding court there before a game, or painting his chest, or taking his team up in the stands at Georgia, or a myriad of other things. But again, it does not mean that it's wrong. It certainly has paid a lot of dividends for the university, because they've recruited very, very well and they've won big.
Coach, do you think that the punishments that Bruce Pearl's faced and for his crime, do you think the punishment meets the crime, basically?
Talking about the eight-game suspension?
The eight-game suspension, the taking off the road, the $1.5 million fine. Do you think that's enough, or do you think he needs to be punished more?
Well, I don't think there's any answer to that. I think anybody that gives an answer to that at this point is stepping out of line, because we don't know the facts. And you won't know all the facts until they go through a complete investigation. And they have their hearing, their day in court, if you will. And once that happens, then we'll know a lot more about it. On the surface right now, the only thing that I could say, and I have no inside information here, the only thing that I would say at this point is that I appreciate the fact that the university has stood staunchly behind Bruce and his staff and said that he is our basketball coach. And, we're going to back him right through the internal investigation hearing. And I appreciate that. When you look at what the SEC did, and again, I have no inside information here, but I would venture to say that before Mike Slive issued his eight-game suspension ruling, there was a conversation with the athletic director at Tennessee and with the president of Tennessee, and said, this is what we're thinking about doing at the SEC office. We would prefer that you do this. They said, we're not going to do it. The SEC stepped in and did it. Now, if that's true, and I don't know that it's true, but if that's true, then there shows a difference in philosophy between the University of Tennessee and the SEC. I cannot imagine the SEC doing that without letting the administration at Tennessee know they're going to do it first and giving them a chance to do it on an internal basis. That would be my assumption.
Coach Jay Billis said the SEC and Mike Slav were out of line issuing that 8-game suspension. Do you agree with that?
Well, unless they know more than has been made public, I would say that's a bit strong. I do. I think at that point, at the point that they issued that ruling, I thought that was a bit much. I think it should be left in the under the control of the university until the final ruling is made, and then it would be up to the university to make a final ruling on their behalf. I think it would be, and then I think the conference steps in. But I think doing it at the time they did it, I think it was a bit premature, in my opinion. Yes.
Coach, trying to predict the NCAA is like trying to predict the weather. We all know that, especially here in East Tennessee where it changes every 15 minutes. And the NCAA seems to be like NASCAR. It's different rules for different schools on different days, depending on who you ask and when you ask them. But that said, do you believe that the SEC's punishment of Pearl will help soften the blow from the NCAA if and when it comes?
Yes, I would say it would. That's a pretty stiff penalty. 8 games in your conference, yeah. I would say that plus what the university has done in terms of salary reduction and other sanctions with his staff, I would say certainly would be favorable when the NCAA makes its final ruling and issues its sanctions.
Coach, based on your experience, do you think that the SEC commissioner did this independent of the NCAA, or do you think that he had some idea of what the NCAA might try to do with Bruce Pearl and he tried to help soften the blow?
I don't think he has any idea which way it's going to go. No, I don't think he does. I think he probably knows more about the situation than we the public knows, but he should. But I think what Mike Slav was doing as commissioner of the league was, I think he was trying to say publicly to the NCAA, we care. We care about our league. We don't want any of our schools in violation. And conference office is not going to stand for it. I mean, we're going to stand up and punish these people. I think he was trying to make a statement. Now, I was at the first meeting that Mike Slav held when he was named commissioner of the league way back. I'm not sure what the year was, 2003, something like that, two or three. And I remember very vividly him making the statement. His goal was that in 5 years, no institution in the SEC would be on probation. And so, you know, when he put himself and the conference in that position, and that's a worthy position to be in, having schools, really go against that goal, conference in a bad light, I think triggers a reaction on his part, and that's what he did. I mean, let's be honest about it. The last 2 years, the conference has had some difficult questions to answer, mostly in football. I mean, you know, with the different situations at Florida, Auburn, Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, the list goes on. There have been some difficult situations that have arisen, and now you got the one in basketball at Tennessee, and you know, what is amazing is that there is such a focus on the basketball, and I haven't seen a whole lot about the football, to be honest about it. I don't know if all of that's been reconciled or not.
Isn't that the way it is, though? I mean, let's face it. You guys knew this from the basketball side. Basketball in this league is something to do. Football is the passion. Football is the hallmark. Even though the basketball tournament generates a lot of money, even though it's very popular, even though it's a huge American pastime of ours, that's just a part of doing business, isn't it, in football country? You came from the ACC. I mean, you saw the difference in the two leagues. I would imagine the difference is stark, Coach.
Well, it is. There's no question about it. But it's still a good league. I mean, the SEC is still a good league. And matter of fact, when you look back over the last 15 years, the SEC has done very well nationally. It really has, in basketball as well as in football. And so it's a powerful league. But still, you know, within the league, the intra-governance within the league is sometimes you kind of say, what?
Amen.
What did you say?
Amen.
So, but, you know, that's the way it is. And, you know, those that have lasted, you know, a long time have done very well with it.
Well, I remember we were on the air the Friday when the Pearl thing came down. We were all sitting with each other, and it was right during smack dab in the middle of the Cam Newton stuff. And our first thought was, well, the league's got to do something here. They've got to do something to look like they're doing something, because they're not going to do anything with a football team that's about to run the table and win a national championship. That's just not going to happen. And, I mean, that's reality, isn't it? Isn't that reality?
I think I would say that's reality there. Yeah, I mean, it was you know, they wouldn't want to pull the trigger on the Auburn team there and then have them not have a chance to play for the national championship. And and also, I think they felt like that. My guess there that they've been in touch with the NCAA, and the NCAA was saying, you know, we don't have anything right now that's going to keep him from playing, and so, you know, let him play. So. I think that's just the reality of the situation. The national championship was at stake there, and sometimes the risk is not worth the reward. But in looking at it, I would say the SEC, Auburn, and the NCAA all said, in this case, there is a risk, but it's not greater than the potential reward.
Thank you. The highest rated college football game in the history of college football. Hello. That to me is a, I mean, why, I don't know why we're not just honest about it. That's what it is. And,
yeah.
And you know, to some extent, it is what it is. And I'm not, are you offended? I'm not offended by that. Does it offend me?
I'd be less offended if they'd say it.
Well, exactly. And Coach, I want to thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure. Having you join us, and one of the things you said a couple years ago on here that's just so thought-provoking to me is you believe that coaches at major schools should be term-limited. In other words, you do your 10 years, and you go do something else. The pressure cooker, the money, you said at that time, I'll give you the quote, and maybe your thinking is different now, but you said, you know, look, you've heard all our speeches, you've heard all my jokes, at this point, you're tired of looking at me, you're tired of listening to me, and it's time to go do something else. Urban Meyer is kind of an interesting example of that, and there are a couple other guys, football-wise. Mark Richt is one of them who seems like he can't please his fan base no matter what he does. I think the more time goes on in this modern era, the more truth you said that day on this show.
Well, I would not change that. I think at the 7-year mark, you got to really take assessment of who you are and what position you're in with your fan base and your administration. At that point, if you feel like you can go on and you're allowed to, I would say the next time to take assessment, you have to do it after every year, but I think that once you hit that 10 years, you got to be very, very careful about trying to go further. Most, and I'll give you a recent example, most coaches, either professionally, NBA, or NCAA-wise, their tenure ends on an unhappy note. Example, Jerry Sloan, 23 years, Utah Jazz. Now, you tell me how that could possibly happen. That is incredible that he would be forced out, edged out, wormed out, whatever you want to call it. I mean, what he did for that Utah Jazz over those years, and then to be, you know, kind of ushered out the way he was ushered without any kind of support from his, that is unbelievable in my life.
Guy's a Hall of Famer. The guy's a Hall of Famer, and they let Darren Williams run him out.
Who's getting ready to be a free agent.
I cannot believe that. I mean, sometimes Charles Barkley goes off the edge sometimes, but I was so happy Charles spoke up for Jerry Sloan the other night. I don't know if you guys heard that or not. Kenny Smith, the same thing, stood up for Jerry Sloan. And these are former players against the player now. They were backing the coach. And then, of course, Karl Malone got in there behind and said, Jerry Sloan and I didn't always agree, but when we went on that court, he was the guy. He was the guy. We did what he said, and he backed us. And I tell you, for that just from a former coaching standpoint, that just made me sick to watch that.
Coach Odom, you are thought-provoking. I'm sure you've opened a lot of eyes today. You make us think every time you come on here, and I hope that you'll have a great day. And thanks for blessing us with your presence today.
Thank you, guys. Call me back anytime. And good luck
Dave
to the Orange up there, and you tell Coach Pearl I'm thinking about him and pulling for him.
Thank you, Coach.
All right. Bye-bye.
Dave Odom, one more time. So many great things just came out of that interview. I mean, here's something I didn't even consider. Why are they lining up on him? Because early in his tenure, he came in and broke the mold.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten all about that thing at Georgia. And that just came to me when he said that. And you know that the coaches in this league said, you know what, if that SOB ever gets on the other side of the line, he's not getting my support.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys are in TV now. He's not getting my support.
Just really candid. And some of the same things that kind of had mirrors on the outside of the coaching fraternity has Pearl there. Now, the thing at Georgia shouldn't have happened. I mean, that was a safety issue that never should have happened. I mean,
we
loved it the day it happened.
Being out was so great. I was jacked that night when they came into the stands.
The other things makes you wonder why a coach of a different school even worries about it. The painting of the chest, that kind of thing. Hey, he said it. It's a unique situation here. You've got a monster football program, and you've got a huge women's basketball program. You're third coming in. You have to be out of the box. You have to do something different to promote your program, especially at the point that Pearl took this one over.
And the reality is, next guy they bring in, because there will be a next guy after Bruce Pearl, whether it's this offseason, three off seasons, whenever it happens, whatever. Better be that way.
Yeah.
Or you will take your place in third.
And to give Pearl credit, I mean, he hadn't done that. I mean, this year's a little different, but he hasn't done that stuff since he got the brand out, since he reached number one a couple years ago. He hasn't been painting his chest at Lady Vol games.
If anything, you could say the program's lost some of its edge since then, since the number one ranking. If anything, you could look at it and go, that was the peak of the edge, the attitude era, if you will.
I think that's a good point.
But the other stuff that he said about, how about a guy that coached this league for several years on the record saying, yeah, Tennessee was sacrificed in the place of Auburn.
Yeah.
We were their scapegoat. They sent us out into the woods a la biblical times with the sins of Auburn all over us as a sin offering.
Term limits, get your seven and get out.
Get out.
Just...
It's great. It's true.
Yeah.
Hey, what year is Pearl getting ready to get into next year?
Seven.
Let me read an email from a guy I just got. I used to be a heavy Bruce Pearl supporter. I have flipped in the last month. Bruce has lost this team. They don't respect him. They don't play for him. Bruce not only lied, he instructed others to lie for him. Not a quality leader you want of young men. Bruce has, by his own actions, damaged good at UT. He has taken this program as far as he can take it. And then he lists a bunch of guys that he wants. When people start taking that, when people start saying things like that, it's fatigue.
Yeah. And I understand that viewpoint. I don't share it, but I understand it. I'm on the side that after 25 years of wandering in the wilderness, I'm not going to forget 5 years over 5 months. I'm not going to do it.
With me and my coaches, I'm always the turning point for me is always, would I be afraid if our coach was at our rival school? And for someone to tell me they would be fine with Bruce Pearl going to Kentucky or going to Georgia or going to Vanderbilt, that's just not, maybe not Vandy, but South Carolina, you would not want to be playing Bruce Pearl two times a year.